This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's Friday again, and we have stories on the Oscars, Pebby, the robotic toy, and how you can grow potatoes on Mars. But first, Mark Zuckerberg posted something very special on his Facebook profile just a few hours ago.
Yeah, so him and Priscilla Chan are expecting another baby girl. Now, the reason this is such good news is because Zuckerberg was very transparent about the difficulties they had in conceiving their first child. There were about three miscarriages before they finally had baby Max, which is who is their first daughter. And this is such good news because they didn't know if another child was even possible.
Yeah, Mark and Priscilla set up this Chan Zuckerberg Biohub to invest up to $1 billion in looking for the cure to every disease in honor of their first daughter, which I think is awesome. And, you know, now Zuckerberg wrote this very heartfelt piece on his post.
Yeah, he said that I cannot think of a greater gift than having a sister, and I'm so happy Max and our new child will have each other. We are all better people because of the strong women in our lives, sisters, mothers, and friends. We can't wait to welcome our new little one and do our best to raise another strong woman. I mean, we just got off International Women's Day, mm-hmm. and this post by someone so influential just shows how important that mentality of equality is. So, you know, good stuff.
Yeah, and let's move on to our first story of the day, and it's about how the whole Oscars fiasco could have been avoided entirely.
Yeah, right. So I know the Oscars are yesterday's news, and people have seen the Best Picture fiasco a billion times on YouTube already. But there's this really interesting article on Fast Company that highlights how the whole thing could have been avoided just by using proper typography. And we thought it was just, it's interesting because it highlights how even the biggest, most prestigious companies and events still don't give enough importance to basic graphic design and how important that is. So basically what they're saying is if the text on the card inside the envelope was clearer, if it had better typography and a logical information hierarchy instead of a wall of, you know, like monotonous text all with the same font size, color, placing and all that, then Warren Beatty or any other person, doesn't matter who, would have been able to catch the mistake if they had known something was wrong.
Yeah, and if you check out the link on our podcast page after this, you can see that a designer by the name of Brandon Jameson actually redesigned the Oscars award card with more reasonable specifications, and it actually looks so much better because the existing card is a mess.
Yeah, so here's what Fast Company and Brandon Jameson say is wrong with the original design that was used. So the original, which was designed by PricewaterhouseCoopers, is topped with a big Oscars logo, which they say is a waste of space because it's the biggest element on the page. It makes no sense because everybody already knows that they are there and the audience doesn't get to see the card. So why bother with such a big logo, right? And then the winner is listed below, centered and in quotes. They say this is not a terrible design, but it's a little weak and too subtle, especially since the winner is the same size and weight as a long list of other names that follows. And the main category, which is Best Picture, is listed in tiny, tiny type in the bottom. And this is where the biggest problem was, because if the category was more obvious, then Warren would have known right off the bat that something was definitely wrong.
Yeah, so here's how Brandon fixed all the flaws. And again, it's better if you take a look at this via the link on our podcast page. But first, he placed the category way up top to give it prominence and priority in big, lean, sans-serif letters. He says that putting the category in large type at the top assures the presenter that they have the correct card and cues them to what they're going to say. But the category type is lighter weight, so even though it's larger, it doesn't steal any thunder from the winner's name, which is bolder than anything else on the card.
Mm-hmm. So he's designed like a nice hierarchy here where you know what's important the moment you look at the card. And as for the winner, the text is almost unchanged. Jameson simply bolded it, but to make it even more prominent, he also uncapitalize all the names beneath it, ensuring there's less of a chance to blend the two with a block of text.
Yeah, and finally, he moved the unnecessary Oscars logo to the bottom and shrunk it down.
Yeah, which makes complete sense because, you know, why would you need to tell people they're at the Oscars when they're already up on stage? It's just bad design.
Yeah, so here's the thing. Some people might think that this is just nitpicking, but I feel this story highlights just how important good design is to just about anything. Mm-hmm. It shows logical thinking. It shows that you're being user friendly, and mm-hmm. it shows that you also care about some of the older celebrities who might be up there reading names. This just shows that simple design changes could have made all the difference, and the whole fiasco wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, or maybe they did it on purpose, and the whole thing was rigged, and they got all the views that they wanted. I mean, fiasco or not, they got more eyes on the awards this year than the last 5 or 10 years. So, I guess any publicity is good publicity.
It is. is.
Right?
Yeah, you can't argue with that logic. And like you said, it did catch my attention and it was a huge deal in the office too when it happened. Let's just hope that this will be the last of all boo-boos like this.
Yeah, right. So let's talk about our next story, which is about the future of humanity. We know our days are numbered here on Earth. We are already building robots that can sustain without any human intervention to leave them here on planet Earth for the end of days as we humans explore life on a different planet.
All right, let's cue violins.
Tiny violins.
Yeah. So that got dark really fast, Arvin. And the most obvious destination for most researchers is planet Mars. Mm-hmm. And in the 2015 blockbuster movie, The Martian, because you know how every new technology seems to be based from old movies like Star Trek and Star Wars and Minority Report. So this movie, Martian, Matt Damon survives in Mars by fertilizing Martian soil with his feces, slicing up potatoes and planting the cutting in the soil. So this eventually grows him enough food and last 100 days. I mean, just a movie, right? But actually, it's not quite so.
So apparently, growing potatoes and other food on Mars is not just a sci-fi dream, but a new NASA-backed potatoes on Mars experiment that's showing that this might actually be possible. NASA has been eyeing for a crewed mission to the Red Planet for decades now, and the Congress has even passed a bill that implores the space agency to reach Mars by 2033. So that's our due date. Oh, and by the way, Jeff Sandhu has more details on this bill and will explore it with Matt Armitage on at 1 o'clock later. So NASA and the International Potato Center, or the CIP.
Wait, what?
The International Potato Center. It does exist. They are based in Peru. It may come as a surprise to some, but they actually do some pretty cool stuff over there. So NASA and the CIP, or the International Potato Center, built a tuber-growing experiment that recreates the extreme conditions on the surface of Mars. Everything happens inside a rocket launchable box called the CubeSat.
Okay, I just can't get over International Potato Center.
Its boss is Mr. Potato Head.
How can you be so serious? Anyway, so this CubeSat that you mentioned is rigged with pumps, water hoses, LED lights, and instruments to emulate Mars-like temperatures, night and day light cycles, gases, and pressure. So in February 2017, researchers dumped practically lifeless soil from Peru's Pampas de la Joya, desert inside, planted a tuber in it, sealed up the box and began filming to see what happened. And preliminary results are actually positive, according to the International Potato Center press release.
I want to call it International Potato Center all the time, not CIP, just International Potato Center. NASA researchers said that if the crops can tolerate the extreme conditions that they are exposing them to in the CubeSat, then they have a good chance to grow on Mars. They will still be doing several rounds of experiments to find out which potato varieties do best. They are also looking to find out the minimum condition that a potato needs to survive. But of course, this is all, you know, just a test at this point.
And because the soil did not actually come from Mars, though it was arid and inhospitable, it probably still had, you know, microbes that may have helped the potato plant's growth. The experiment also used potato cuttings instead of seeds. That's an issue because making potatoes last a month's or years long journey may require heating under pressure called thermostabilization, or a blast of radiation.
And this would damage the cells on the potato, making it hard to grow plants from cuttings. But after other experiments, it was shown that it may be possible to grow food on Martian soil and even more inhospitable moon dust called regolith.
And the one big difference from the movie The Martian and real life is that NASA scientists and a botanist by the name of Bruce Bugbee said that in the movie, Matt Damon mixes his feces into the soil, which could actually be toxic to the plants. But besides that, he doesn't see any reason why it isn't possible. So then, Arvin, fancy some Mars potato or mashed potatoes for lunch later?
No, I think I just lost my appetite. And you can check out the video of the experiment on YouTube. Quite interesting. And it's been sped up so you don't have to watch for hours and hours. It's just, you know, a couple of minutes.
Yep, we'll take a short break and we'll be back more on small enterprise biz bites, especially if you're a pet lover and struggle to leave home every day, leaving your pet behind. We have something that could help you with that pain. BFM 89.9.
Barry fronts Motown. BFM 89.9.
You're still with Angie and Arvin on Enterprise Biz Bytes. And if you're like most pet owners out there and feel overwhelmed with guilt every time you leave your pet alone at home and you go to work, I think we now have a solution for you. It's a ball.
Okay, hold on. Don't make Pebby sound like just a ball, you know. It's a high-tech, remotely controlled ball that could be the perfect companion for your pet when you're not at home, providing it with entertainment, mental stimulation, and exercise.
But effectively, it's a ball, you know, a robotic pet sitter ball called Pebby. And that's what it's called, okay? And this Pebby will let you interact with your dog or cat via your smartphone whenever you're out of the house. And it features a wide-angle camera so you can watch your canine or kitty dash around the house as you tease it by rolling the ball any place you like. Of course, the camera also lets you remotely snap images and shoot videos so you can have the best moments or quickly share them on Facebook or Instagram.
And Pebby can apparently also project a laser light onto the floor, ramping up the entertainment factor for your Furby, because we all know that cats love that, you know, that laser stuff. And it includes a bunch of LED lights that you can even play about in the dark or in dimly lit rooms.
Yeah, tempting as it may sound, you won't be able to play with your pet the whole time you're out of the house. After all, there may be a small matter of work, you know, to consider. What if you spot your boss heading in your direction just as you are about to send a ball scuttling away for, you know, between the Fluffy's leg?
But see, then, thankfully, Pebby's creators have thought of all that and wisely included an automatic mode that'll keep your four-legged friend happily entertained, at least until the, you know, the battery gives up.
And the brains behind Pebby have also created a cool charging station for when Pebby runs out of juice. And when that happens, the Pebby kennel comes into play. So simply tap the auto dock function on Pebby's mobile app and it'll automatically locate the charging station and slot itself in. And Pebby offers, 90 minutes of playtime and lasts for 12 hours of idle mode.
I feel like we're doing an infomercial for Pebby. Pebby owes us monies. The kit also includes a smart collar so you can track your pet's activities throughout the day with all the data sent straight to the app. But here's what I find like really cool. Pebby can also emit a woof or meow or your own like personal pre-recorded message, something like, oh, who's a good boy? Or like, go fetch. Or even like, stop biting the slippers. You know, something like that.
I mean, like, sit. All the time.
Don't do that.
Well, Pebby is expected to go on sale online this July with early bird specials offered at $124. So that's, what, 550 ringgit for the whole package? But that's about half, you know, the expected retail price. So I expect to pay 1,000 ringgit when it finally hits the shelves.
Yeah.
And we've come to the last part of our show. And because it's Friday, we're giving you a recap on some of the best shows throughout the week on Enterprise.
Yeah, let's start with our International Women's Day special featuring Jasmine O'Hara, the founder of the Worldwide Tribe. Her organization helps refugees across Europe and the Middle East through the influence of social media to connect people all over the globe in one community of international citizens, or also known as the Worldwide Tribe.
Yep, so here's a short snippet from the interview.
Coming up to 2 years ago, in summer 2015, when there was a lot in the news about the refugee crisis, but in a very different way from it's documented now. So if you cast your mind back, especially in the UK, there was a lot of negativity in the news and headlines said things like swarms of migrants and marauding migrants, especially the people that were coming into the UK from the Calais jungle, which is a refugee camp in northern France, not far from my home, actually. So I had a lot of questions about this camp, you know, who are the people that are living there and why are they there and what happened to them and what's life like in the camp? And I felt like the mainstream media just wasn't answering these questions for me. So I made the journey basically out of curiosity, I guess. I really wanted to know more and experience it for myself. So that's how it started. And that was how my life changed basically overnight.
Yeah, super interesting stuff, and you guys should give that a listen. On 5 for Fortune, it's about 5 of the most innovative startups in Hollywood. So on this episode, we looked at the startup culture around Hollywood and how these 5 companies are either providing services or innovating technology that's changing Tinseltown in more ways than one.
And then Thursday's Enterprise was about a humble man who shifted his career from being a dentist into an F&B entrepreneur. So Dr. Jeffrey Goh, he ventured into his love for pork ribs, and for the last 17 years, and he successfully developed brands like Morgan Fields, a house restaurant and bar, Caprice Kioska, across the region. And this comes from someone who actually have no F&B background at all. And I think it's a noteworthy entrepreneur. So just listen to the podcast and find out more how he did it.
Yeah. So, and on yesterday's Game Time, Jeff Sandhu and Richard Bradbury had a jam-packed show as they spoke to Arata Naito of Sony Interactive Entertainment Singapore about the journey of the PlayStation, and then a review for Honor. It's some kind of a hack and slash game, and then a quick shout out to Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon Wildlands and Horizon Zero Dawn. So if you're a gamer and you speak in games and understand all of that, then check out Game Time episode 29 under Tech Talk. So all of these shows are available on our BFM app on both the Apple App Store and on Android, Google Play. So just just look for Enterprise and you'll get all these goodies to listen to over the weekend.
And coming up next is the Breakfast Grill replay. Julian Ng spoke to David Fong. He's the president for FinTech Association of Malaysia. Now, last year, Bank Negara Malaysia issued the Financial Technology Regulatory Sandbox Framework that would enable the experimentation of fintech solutions in a live environment. And it has, you know, given birth to a FinTech Association to represent the collective voice of fintechs in Malaysia. So Julian follows up with David to find out how well this initiative has been received.
Yeah, so that's on our Breakfast Grill replay. So this has been the Enterprise Biz Bites with Arvind Yuvaraj and Angeline Tay. You're listening to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.